Right now, save 50 to 70% off absolutely everything at Gap Factory. Even better, get 40% off clearance styles, plus t-shirts from $4.99 and shorts from $9.99. And just in time for summer, save 50 to 70% off the entire store at Banana Republic Factory. Plus, 50% off clearance and doorbuster dresses and polos starting at $19.99. Only at Banana Republic Factory stores. Search our store locator for your nearest Gap Factory and Banana Republic Factory store, or shop us online.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, no matter where you're at the country. You're tuned into the Bobby Eaton Show, and hey, where I bring you community news, celebrity talk, and a various variety of different issues. And boy, do we have a show for you today. And in our studios, I have my guest host. I'm bringing her aboard. That's Miss Sansa Ray.
Hello, hello, hello.
How you doing there?
Doing just fantastic. Getting ready to put the flashlight on Dr. Omar Johnson.
Yes, everybody tune in. Also in the studio, we have live Mr. Marlo from Detroit.
Hey, hey, hey. Woo. How's everybody doing?
Everybody's doing pretty good.
You know,
this show that we have today, we've been kind of planning it because Dr. Omar, he's coming to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yes.
And that date is?
February the 28th. That's this Sunday. Everybody, tell a friend, tell all of your friends, you don't want to miss out on this. Ooh. You want to get some knowledge. You want to get some ideas. You want to get some solutions. You've got to be there. It's at the Greenwood Cultural Center right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It will be from 5 to 8 p.m.
Great. So we want all your listeners to get on Facebook. Get on your texting and go ahead and send it out, you know.
That's right.
Want to make sure that everybody's in touch, you know. We've had a series of different shows on the Bobby Eaton Show. And just to recap, we did a segment on Stacey Dash when she made the comment of no Black History Month, no BET, things like that.
Don't get you started
on that one. Huh? Oh, yes. And we had that. Also, we did a segment on Beyonce, her performance at the Super Bowl, you know, about the Black Panther issue. Mm. So as we know, racism is real heavy and prevalent in our country. It has always been there, but now a lot of the technology and media sources are capturing a lot of that type of things that are going on.
Yeah, it's a strong propaganda subliminal message that they're trying to just spread, and we have to be aware of that. We have to know the concept of what is real and what is not. Who is trying to do something like Dr. Johnson and who is not.
Exactly. And that's what we should be doing is getting behind our people who are trying to do things to help us, to give us that knowledge that we need.
Yes.
And it's a need. It's not just something that we can just sit back and just avoid. Mm-hmm. We need that knowledge and that research. And we need to know, how can people know where they're going if they don't know where they come from.
Where they've come from,
that's exactly right.
That's why I'm so excited about this.
Oh, I'm so excited about it, too. How you feel over there, Marlo?
I can't say the words as it's going through me right now. I think you're filling that up. So. But I want to say I'm very eager to listen to Dr. Omar. And, yeah, I'm a big fan of Mr. Omar. I mean, it's not a video that pops up when I see his face that I don't view.
Wow. Exactly. And you know what's so profound about this man is that he reaches out to everyone. I became aware of Dr. Johnson through my daughter.
Oh,
she's 25.
I
so
see.
That generation
is listening
to him.
Yes. And that's so important that our generation of our children, our grandkids and things of that nature, that they get they get this,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
They have to get this, you know, and we must push this information down.
That's it. We have to instill it in
them. Instill it in
them,
you know.
We have to keep that stuff around our homes.
Right, right,
you know,
exactly.
Let them see our heritage. Be proud of that.
You know, because there were so many people, black people before us who died, you know, mm-hmm. who gave up their lives
right.
so that we can be where we're at today.
Right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Right.
And Dr. Johnson's going to be right down at the Greenwood Cultural Center on the 28th.
That's
and
right.
the heart yes. of the 1921 riot in Black Wall Street.
And in case you don't know that address, it is 322 North Greenwood Avenue. You know that's our Greenwood Archer and Pine?
That's our Greenwood
right
Archer and Pine.
That
Pine.
Is the prosperity
so that
here.
Means you need to be there. There's no excuse.
Right. How do we say back in the day, be there, be square?
You know, and adults, bring your children
yes.
if necessary. You
yes.
know, there's a message out there for them.
Right.
Dr. Umar is very much involved in our youth. You
yes,
know what I mean?
Is.
And so,
exactly.
and you know.
And
that,
the stigmas that they try to put on our young people. You know, all of this medicating and behavioral stigmatization that they try to put.
For
yeah,
sure.
And I was just looking at one of his posts where it says Dr. Umar fights to keep black children from being misdiagnosed, expelled, thrown in special ed, miseducated, and mistreated. How aware are we as a black community of that?
Oh, my goodness.
It's prevalent. It's very prevalent all
very,
across America.
Very much so prevalent. You know,
yeah.
So we must keep that in mind. You know what I mean? Keep that in mind. And, you know, we're in a technical age. And, you know, you can get research and you can gather all this information off of YouTube and various
yes.
different social media sites. Mm-hmm. And you can get this knowledge. We didn't have that back in the day.
We didn't.
You know what I mean? The world, we had to go to the books, go to the library.
That's
go
to the library.
Library to
because
get this information.
Because the books they gave us at school wouldn't tell us.
No, the books were outdated and mm-hmm. some of them were, you know, were behind and
yes.
things like that. But today, you have access to that information.
The doors
you know.
Are open.
Doors
wide
are,
open.
The doors are really
you can
open.
Get knowledge
yeah.
anywhere now.
Yeah. No,
at any age.
Exactly.
My 8-year-old, my 4-year-old grandchild
mm-hmm.
can maneuver the computer better than I can.
Oh, they can.
Oh, man.
They're born with it. You know,
yes,
they come
yes.
into this world mm-hmm. knowing how to do a lot of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just not to get off the path, but, you know, we've lost a few people lately. We lost the great Miss Maurice White.
Yes.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What a great loss.
Great loss, you know. And, you
yeah,
know.
74 years.
Yeah, 74 years with Maurice White, you know. And hopefully the Grammys will pay some type of tribute to him and Natalie Cole.
Yes.
You know, because
yes.
Natalie, I've got some ties with Natalie,
yes,
so, you know.
And, ties. My heart just sunk when I read that, and you were the first person that I thought
oh,
of.
Thank you.
You were the first person, because I know, I could only imagine how you were feeling being so close with working
yeah.
with her and
yeah.
being with her and spending all that time.
Yeah, yeah,
a wonderful
yeah.
woman.
Sad day for me. You know, mm-hmm. I worked with Natalie Cole as her bass guitarist for years, and, you know, it was kind of like losing a family member,
yeah.
you know. So mm-hmm. with that being said. Well, with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and play a little tribute to Earth, Wind, and Fire. And here's a little thing called
the men who need more than they get.
was a tribute to Maurice White. On the phone, we have Dr. Umar Johnson. How are we doing there, sir?
Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for having me on the show. Greetings to your co-host and to the entire Oklahoma Black family.
Hey.
Oh, okay. Hey. Thank you, sir, sir. Well, great. We're, you know, we've been anticipating this this show, and we just wanted to say thank you for, like, taking the time to come out here and share some of this wisdom and knowledge. Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm actually calling you from Maryland. Wow. Yesterday, I had to do a lecture in Suffolk, Virginia, and so I left out of Suffolk today, and I'm now in Maryland. And on Wednesday, I'll be heading out to the Caribbean, St. Martin Island, the University of Phillipsburg. They asked me to come and keynote their annual Black History program.
Wow, wow.
Well, I tell you, Dr. Umar, we are very much anticipating you being here Sunday on February the 28th. We can't wait to actually meet, talk, and see, and hear all the wonderful and great solutions and things that you're doing.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. It will only be my second visit ever to Tulsa and my first since 2014. So it's long overdue, as Tulsa is one of those major cities historically and contemporarily for African Americans that I haven't had a whole lot of time to spend inside. So I'm looking forward to coming back.
Okay. Well, Dr. Johnson, are you familiar? I know you are familiar with that 1921 riot that took place here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, correct?
Yes, sir, very much so. In fact, when I was there in 2014, some of the brothers and sisters there who were descendants of many of those who participated, or should I say was victimized by that riot, they actually took me on a driving tour and a walking tour, and I got a chance to see firsthand a lot of what happened and where it took place and some of the remnants that are still there to this day.
Right, right, right. Well, we're looking forward to having you. Now, Dr. Johnson, we've had a couple of questions to ask you. When it comes to Black economic development, what are your views about that?
Well, here's the problem with Black economics, and we all know that there can be no Black power without some sort of control over the Black dollar. And our economic situation is our Achilles heel, because we have not been able to harness our wealth in a manner that allows us to use it to fuel our political and economic advancement as a people. We're the only non-white ethnic group in America that doesn't have an infrastructure. Latinos have a political economic infrastructure through Arabs, East Indians, Chinese, and other all non-white ethnic groups. We're the only people without it. And it's two things that has to be understood when you're dealing with Black people and their money. Number one, we were conditioned, going back to slavery, to spend our money on our wants and beg for our needs. We have to understand that slavery socialized Black folk to not be concerned about their future. Under slavery, your entire existence was for the benefit of your master. So there was no need to have life insurance. There was no need to have any college program for your children. There was no need to have a trust fund for your family, because your life only existed to make someone else's life better. So we still suffer to some degree from that tendency to only be concerned with our immediate reality, which is to say that Black people suffer from what I call disaster consciousness. We live in a state of crisis, a perpetual state of crisis that has us worrying about today but never tomorrow. When someone is not sure if they're going to live another year, why be concerned with taking care of next year and instead just worry about today? And that is why we do not save, and that is why we're only concerned with spending.
Oh, wow, wow, that's real.
So, Dr. Umar, what are the baby steps that we as a people need to focus on to start to change that?
One thing that has to happen, we have to build Black banks, credit unions, and savings and loan institutions. One yes. of the paradigm shifts that we're going to need to make here in this second decade of the 21st century is going to have to be a paradigm shift away from the center of the community to the bank being the center of the community. That is not to say that the church is not important. It is. However, because the black church has not taken on any of the economic responsibility of revitalizing our neighborhoods, they can no longer be the center of community life. The bank has to be the center of community life because banks grow businesses. When you look in the white community or any community, it is the banks that finance the businesses. So if we want to create infrastructure, institutions, organizations, systems, processes, and protocols, we have to have a banking establishment to finance that infrastructure.
Well, what happened to our black churches, man? How do you feel? What happened?
The black church suffered the same fate as black leadership in general, and that is after the FBI assassinated Dr. King in 1868, the United States government decided on a program of a black bourgeoisie gatekeeper system where they would elevate certain blacks to positions of prominence so that they could control the progress of all other blacks. The government had decided that having white-on-black oppression was not good for business. Black-on-black oppression looks a whole lot better because politically uneducated African-Americans will not recognize racism if it's being handed out with a black hand. And so what they did was they influenced black leadership, which includes the church, to move away from a confrontational approach to black change to an accommodationist approach to black change. So up until 68, if black people wanted something, fought for it, they protested, they marched, they went to jail, they faced off with hoses and dogs and police. That was up until 68. After 68, as opposed to fighting the system, we decided to join the system. And so the politics of, for example, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, not to pick on them per se, but their politics is not confrontational. Their politics is accommodationist. We're going to work with the government as opposed to challenging the government, and you all can see how far that's gotten us nowhere.
Well, Dr. Umar, I'm really, really, really glad that you said that because I'm going to be honest with you, man. I have a really, really bitter taste in my mouth when it comes to churches because I'm actually from the Detroit, Michigan area, and I've seen how the economic development has crushed that city. And, I mean, I could walk down from one major street to the other major street, and there's a church on every corner, and every church that's on those corners, they don't exist anymore. They're gone. So all that money that was invested, all the money that was given to those churches, you know, my question always is, well, what happened to the money? Where did the money go? You know, people were spending their lives investing in those churches, and now those churches don't even exist. They're gone. So, I mean, I'm at the point now to where, you know, I'm for solution. I'm for what can we do as a people? You know, I'm always amazed at what happened here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You know, I didn't even find out about that until I got down here.
Yes.
What happened in Black Wall Street? And, I mean, it blew me away when I heard about that. I'm like, you mean to tell me that there were blacks that had their own businesses, had their own banks, had their own churches, had their own money? And, I mean, the story just blew me away. So what really pushes me to want to do something is, what is it that these people do? What did they do? Because their conditions were much worse than what our conditions are today. So what is
it?
You know, how can we possess what they possess to make it work?
How can we get back to get back to where it was?
Yeah.
Here's the one thing that we have to recognize whenever we deal with the Black Wall Street concept and the economic success that we enjoyed in those prosperous 20s, and that is your Tulsa, your Rosewood, your Charleston, South Carolina, your Durham, North Carolina. You had so many of them. But here's the one thing that we have to keep in mind. As successful as they were, they were forced to cooperate with each other and work together because white people did not allow us to participate in their economic reality.
Oh, see,
in other words, it was a success that was based on segregation. Okay. In other words, white people did not accept us or allow us to participate in their political economic reality. And because of that, we were forced. I have to say it again. We were forced to work together. And the reason we do not have the Black Wall Street today is because our enemy no longer forces us.
Wow, that's profound. That's profound.
That's real profound. You know, well, shouldn't we start on today in 2016? Shouldn't we really start with our youth? You know, our young boys. I know that you have programs dealing with our youth. Can you kind of explain that to us a little bit?
Certainly. The two main things that I'm working on now with the youth, one of them obviously, which gets the most attention, is the Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey RBG International Leadership Academy for Black Boys, which is going to be an independent residential academy for our sons where we teach them entrepreneurship. It's going to be a revolutionary entrepreneurship academy because it is my position that simply sending black children off to college is not helping the black community. All it's doing is putting us into debt by the tens of millions of dollars in the name of higher education. We have over 2 million African Americans in this country with master's and doctorate degrees who cannot find a job. So simply sending out children to college is not a solution. So with FDMG, we're going to teach our boys the laws of money and the laws of wealth and the laws of finance. So when they graduate from high school, they do not necessarily have to go to college. They will already be well-versed in the stock market, well-versed in the real estate market, well-versed in the investment and commodities market, and they will be able to make a living for themselves and their families with an entrepreneurial education and not just a collegiate education.
Dr. Umar, I know that this is something that you really push for our youth, but I think one of my questions would be, too, is this an opportunity for adults as well? Because that's something you said, such something that's so valuable that I see going on. I have so many friends who've been to college with so many degrees, but like you were saying again, they don't have the jobs, or they have a bunch of degrees and they're not even trying to create jobs. So I'm like, well, what was the purpose of you going to college? You know, but now you have this big debt. So my thing is, because I would be an individual that would be really interested in learning this, really interested in for this type of opportunity to come. Is there a way for someone like me to get involved with that?
Yes, sir. In fact, once we finalize the grade school program, which we hope to be a pre-K to 12 program in the final analysis, we then want to do an adult education program, and we also want to start a junior college, and then hopefully at some future point in time, we want to give to Black America a contemporary Black college. We always talk about the historically Black colleges, but we need some contemporarily Black colleges. The HBCUs, as great as they are and were, and I support every last one of them, because without the HBCU, you wouldn't have half of the Black professionals we now have in America. But we also have to keep in mind that HBCUs were started to help our people fit within a European political economic reality, that no longer has a space for Black people. So we need modern Black colleges to teach our people how to create their own political economic reality without trying to force that way into the white reality.
Right. And I think that's the first step, as I was asking before about the baby steps. That would be the first step in us actually getting black-owned banks, because they'll have the knowledge to implement, to create that. But what I also wonder is to establish something that's so much needed, and not only in Tulsa, but everywhere
throughout
America.
The country.
Yeah, throughout the country
throughout
in
the
our
country.
Communities. And I understand about the the black-owned businesses, black-owned banks, but how do you garner that the revenue to establish that?
Mm. Where does it come from is what you're asking.
I mean, we know we need
but
how do we garner that? Exactly. Who do we go to?
Where do we start?
Where do we start?
All that we would have to do is we would simply have to get African-Americans, and I believe many of them would do this, to redirect their banking from Chase Manhattan and Wells Fargo and Bank of America and simply put their checks into the black bank. We're not asking them to donate a dime. We're only asking them to make our bank the depository or repository of their paycheck. If they want to withdraw all the money, they can withdraw all the money. The way banks operate is they operate off of the deposit. So just by you depositing the checks in there, that is able to be claimed as revenue that can be used to finance the different projects we need to create and also float loans for our people. We have to understand something. Much of the money that is being circulated that whites and other non-black folks use in this country to build infrastructure, the money doesn't even exist. Under the laws of banking, you can loan money you don't even have based off your projected deposit. And so once we get into banking, we will see that we won't have to pass the hat. We won't have to ask for donations. All we have to do is show our people the science of banking that simply says your deposited paycheck, even if you take it all out after the check clears, is worth more to this bank than any donation that you can make. So I think that once our people understood how banking operates, they will be more interested in getting behind something like this. Now, obviously, you do need the startup capital. You do need the initial investors. But for a credit union, I think it's something like $300,000 for a bank. It's a little bit more than that. But I don't think you're going to have a difficult time getting that either, because if you look at the annual income in any black neighborhood, you're going to get way more than the $1 million you might need to garner the equity to start up a bank. So I don't think it's difficult. The problem is not getting it done. The problem is our leadership isn't even thinking about economic empowerment. And the church, I believe, the black church is one of the biggest hindrances to economic empowerment, because if black people were empowered to earn wealth and were taught how to build wealth, I'm not too sure they would continue to go to church, because with all due respect to the religious community, churches prey on the hopeless. They do not do a good job of attracting people who are already successful.
Dr. Umar, now, you know, culturally, we are entertainers and we're sports figures, and we have a lot of entertainers and sports figures that have millions of dollars. What is it going to take to have those? Because culturally, that's what we do. We dance, sing, and we play sports, and we make millions of dollars in those areas. What is it going to take to unite some of these football players and basketball players and singers and dancers to come off some of that, to build some of these banks and invest in some of these banks, to go back to their neighborhoods in which they've grown up in and now they've left? What is it going to take for us to kind of convince some of them who have the millions of dollars to put back into the community?
Well, first of all, we have to recognize that our black celebrities, be they athletes or entertainers, we see them as people, but from a capitalist perspective, they are a corporate product. C is a corporate product. LeBron James is a corporate product. They are merchandise. That means that they are controlled by the corporation. Everything they think, everything they say, everything they do must be rubber stamped by the corporation that created them. They are merchandise. They are not free to exercise their own discretion to use their money how they see fit. We have to understand the black celebrity is in a position to create economic revolution for black people. And because of that, they are being watched more closely by the FBI than Umar Johnson ever could be. I can talk about it, but they have the money to make it a reality. And because of that, they are under a surveillance that's greater than anything COINTELPRO has ever put in our community. So that is to say that they will never be, they will never be the catalyst for the economic change. They will come in after the change has already taken place, which means
we have to do the work.
We have to bake the cake, and the celebrities will put the cherry on top when it's done.
Wow. Well, Dr. Umar, we're going to go to the phone lines right here. We have a caller that's been waiting for a while here, and we're going to go to those. Caller, 214, you're on the Bobby Eaton Show.
Yes. Good evening, and I wanted to address the sports and entertainment aspect of raising funds for the community, and that would be that these corporations bankroll, like the doc said, these athletes, but they already know where the true athletes come from. So you flip that as black people and you send your black athletes to black universities where that you filter that money from the corporations to the black universities. They're going to follow. America loves athletes, and they're going to follow the athletes. The money's going to follow the athletes, and you flip it and you turn it to where you have to talk to your community and send your young black athletes to black colleges where they're more respected, they're more comfortable, and they're more inclined to educate themselves.
So how you feel about that, Dr. Umar?
I actually totally agree with him. In fact, I was questioned on another interview, actually several interviews, about the Black Missouri, University of Missouri Black Student Athlete protest that took place a few months ago, not only in Missouri, but at many of the predominantly white institutions around the country, black students and black student athletes engaged in protests against racism on campus. And people asked my opinion, and in support of what the caller just said, I said that if these students were really serious about fighting against racism, you would not be giving $30,000 of your money a year away to a racist white college. You would divest from the University of Missouri and take your $30,000 a year to Howard or Spelman or Hampton Clark or Morehouse. If you really wanted revolution, you would simply cripple the white college by divesting. What could any of the Division I white colleges do without the black male athlete? Do you realize that many of these Division I white colleges, they make more money off of a football team than they do from
any other operation,
including tuition? So he's correct. That would be revolution for every Division I black athlete to leave the white college and go to a black one. But there's only one problem with that. Black people lack the cultural commitment to make a major move like that.
In the financial arena,
Latinos would do it, Arabs would do it, Indians would do it, European Jews would do it. Black people hate being black too much for you to expect them to do something in the interest of other black people.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you said it that way, because
that is so true. You know, they're just laying it out the way it really, really supposed to be. You know,
and it comes from years and years of that propaganda and that mindset that we have that needs to be changed. Like the caller says, let's take our children and put them somewhere where they're respected and where they're still going to garner those big monies in the end.
Also,
education.
Dr. Umar, don't you think that we need more black media, you know, like TV and radio and more communication
have to have your own information and propaganda dissemination network and system. Why? Because the brain, I don't care how intelligent you are, the brain will always be the victim of repetition. Anything that the mind is consistently exposed to, no matter how intelligent that mind is, that mind will come to believe it. Look on television. Look at the most popular shows on television. They are very demeaning and disrespectful to black women in particular, black people in general.
See it.
Our children are being programmed by Scandal and Housewives and Empire and Orange is the New Black and all these disrespectful shows about black folk. This is nothing but informational warfare. And the problem is black people actually think that entertainment is not political. Entertainment is the most political aspect of American society because before you can exterminate a people physically, you have to exterminate their image in the minds of the community. So before you can kill black men on the street, you have to kill the image of black men on television.
Dr. Umar, I'm so glad you said that. I've been doing media.
We've been talking about it.
For about 25 years, man, and you are so correct and on point with that, because I've seen how much power can be used when using media, and I'm so glad you. I have a question I want to ask you. It's kind of pointing towards what you just said, and it is: do you believe that we have a propaganda campaign going on in America now? With the events in the past, also with what happened in Flint, Michigan.
Oh, yes, that whole Flint, Michigan situation, and I was just up there. I was the keynote speaker for the MLK Day for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Greater Flint, and here's what I told the community. I said, I need y'all to explain to me why you do not have a group of black attorneys who are currently putting together a lawsuit for genocide, crimes against humanity, environmental racism, and reparations to the African Americans of Flint, because this water crisis is an intergenerational crisis. They just discovered that it was going on, but it's been taking place for decades. This is a reparations lawsuit. This is a human rights lawsuit. And I don't see anyone in Flint taking on this water crisis from the perspective of a crime against humanity.
Exactly.
That is genocide. Genocide. This should be a lawsuit against the United States government, the state of Michigan, the city of Flint, as well as the automobile manufacturers in that city, because they are the ones responsible, from what I was told while I was there, they're the ones responsible for polluting the water supply in the first place, by using the water as a avenue for toxic dumping. They said the automobile companies are responsible for this. They were dumping their toxic waste into the clean water supply for years. The governor knew it, the president knew it, the mayor knew it, and no one did anything about it.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's happening more than there in Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
It's happening there.
Well, it's the other places as well.
Was it Sand Springs or Skytook?
Polluted water.
Yeah. Nobody's doing nothing.
And it's happening a lot in the impoverished areas of the United States, where you find a lot of minorities, you're going to find something going on in the water system, in the water treatment,
Wow.
That's great.
One of the issues that I have, family, is one of the reasons I have such profound respect for Charles Hamilton Houston and Thurgood Marshall, Johnny Cochran. These were black attorneys who were more about just making money for themselves. They looked at the greater issues affecting our people, and they said, what can we do to make legal change in this country to reduce the barriers that racism is imposing upon black folks? And my problem, and I know it's not all black lawyers, there's a lot of great ones who do look out for the greater cause, but we have so many legal issues facing black folks, I don't understand why we do not have teams of attorneys attacking the major issues that are facing black
folks.
That's
a good point.
Criminal justice, that should be a major thing. Miseducation, that should be major lawsuits the way they're using special ed in 88. Flint water crisis, environmental racism. I mean, you got all these major cases, and nobody's stepping up, including the NAACP Defense League, to take on these fights for our people.
Wow.
It makes you wonder why.
Yeah, it makes you wonder why.
Why?
Because they are bourgeoisie. Because the average black person with a college degree, especially if they have a PhD, and I can say this because I have one myself, they are not, many of them are not in the least bit interested in what affects poor black people, working class black people, and everyday black people. They live in this tunnel vision world where all they want to do is copy the social life of white folk, and nothing else matters to them. And so we have an entire population of European black folk who don't care at all what happens to the rest of us.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Boy, you are so correct. What is it? Bourgeois black people, you know. European black people. And why?
And you know what's the shame about it? You know what's the shame about it? Dr. Carter G. Woodson, father of Black History Month, he said that in Miseducation of the Negro, he said that only amongst the Negro race where you find their traitors to be so well concentrated amongst the educated elite. He said amongst most people, the traitors are the dregs of the civilization. They are the people in the worst situation. But amongst black people, our traitors are actually our most educated. They are actually our most financed people. In other words, those who can help us the most are actually hurting us the most.
Wow. And Dr. Umar, do you think that is out of a fear of the system, of the government? Do you think there's
an
infill?
Or is it by control?
Yeah, well, that's my point exactly, too. Is it control?
I think fear, it's three factors, three. Number one, black people love white people. We'll never fix our problems until we acknowledge that. Like when people say, why black people buy the white business instead of going to a black business? Why do most of our African-centered scholars who love being black so much, they love Africa so much, but 99.9% of them work at white colleges, not black ones? Why do black men go out of their way to date and marry white women? Because we love, why do black kids go to white colleges instead of black? We love white people, yes, the very same people who are responsible for every genocide and every act of marginalization we've ever suffered from. We are in love with them. Black people love white people, and if you say something wrong about white people around black people, they will kill you for it.
Wow. So it's a conditioning of the mind. It is a conditioning
of the mind that begins in preschool, that gets intensified in kindergarten when your son or daughter shows up for the first day of school with their hand over their heart saying, I pledge allegiance to this flag. And they pledge allegiance to that flag 180 times a school year, times 13 years of school. You're looking at over 18,000 pledges to the enemy's existence.
So it's a re-education.
How do you send a black child to a white public school, get indoctrinated, get programmed, get brainwashed, and then you expect them to come back and work, and it will never happen because the most formidable year you can do to the mind is between the ages of 3 and 13. Whoever has your child's mind between the age of 3 and 13 will likely control their mind until the day they die.
That is so very true. You know, I had the experience of working with an elementary school in Texas. And we had some Muslim students to show you the difference in cultural.
Mm-hmm.
When the children would stand up to do the Pledge of Allegiance, it was mandatory that we set these two Muslim children that we had in the class at a computer with headphones over their heads so they did not have to not only hear that, but when it was Ramadan or anything like that, we would have to take them to their own, to a little room designated for them where they could do their prayer. So I understand what he's saying about every other culture has that connection.
Right.
But we as a people, we don't. And that's
well,
so
again,
very true.
Well, again, too, what my argument would always be, that I think one of our issues is too, is somewhere we've lost our identity. You know, when we say African American, that's hard for me because I got enough sense to know that Africa is a continent. There are many countries within Africa, and it's almost like our identity is lost.
Well, we lost it at the dinner table,
well,
too.
Well, we lost it a long time ago. We've been Negro.
We also got to recognize something, and that is when Africans came over here, our first 200 years in America, we still identified as African for 200 years. That's how you got the African Methodist Episcopal Church. That's how you got the African free schools. That's why you had Africa this and Africa that, because we still knew who we were. And then right around the 19th century, pushing up into the Civil War, black leadership resolved themselves upon a policy of no longer identifying as African. They felt that if we stopped identifying with our native land, white people would accept us. And ever since we advocated our identity as African, we start going from Negro, folks would accept us if we chose the right name to be called. And Jesse Jackson in 1988 at an Urban League conference introduced the word African-American for the first time, which I believe has brainwashed an entire generation of black folk into thinking that they are African-American. It is not a legal word. It is not a legal term. It is the social creation of Jesse Messy Jackson. How can you be half slave, half slave master? How can you be half the rapist and half the rape victim? How can you be God and the devil at the same time?
Right. Oh, boy. What great knowledge you brought forth. You know, a lot of people didn't know that. You
I told y'all every time Umar's video comes on,
right.
I'm all eyes.
Umar.
Now you see why.
All the way.
Don't forget you can call in at 646-716-5525. That's 646-716-5525. Don't forget to press the 1 if you want to speak with the host, Mr. Bobby Eaton, or if you want to speak with Dr. Umar Johnson.
I'd rather him talk to Umar.
Yes.
Gotta talk to Umar because he's bringing forth all that knowledge, right? You know,
he has answers.
He got answers.
He has answers.
And these are the answers that we need.
Yes.
You know, it's a NEED need
to do something, because I am tired of talking.
We've
been talking for decades.
We can talk forever. You know, just talk. God. Action is the word.
Mm-hmm.
Put forth some action.
Yeah.
Do something in your community. Step out. Embrace somebody.
And
you
the
know?
More that we have speakers come here to Tulsa, because Tulsa is a hard place to condition and convince black people to work as a community. It really is. And all we really do have is our church. You know, most black folks, they go to church here in Tulsa, myself included.
Well, you know, the statistics show that there's over 200 plus churches in the black community here in Tulsa. You know,
they're still functioning,
but a lot of those churches is have Sunday morning worship and Wednesday night Bible study, and the preachers go around in their fancy clothes and suits, and the first lady with those hats on and stuff, and they live good, and the congregation suffers.
That's true.
You know,
that is one thing I can appreciate about Metropolitan Baptist Church, because Dr. Ray Owen,
pastor. You're at a great church.
Oh, it's a wonderful church. And our pastor is really concentrating on charter schools. We're really involved with the community. We have a lot of community-based activities constantly, every month. So I know that he's going to be at this Dr. Umar's
event. Three questions.
Yes.
Three questions for the pastors. I don't care if it's Tulsa, Philly. I don't care if it's T.D. Jakes, Eddie Long, Crypto Dollar, whoever. Number one, where the hell is your bank? Number one, where is your bank so you can incubate black business? That's number one. Number two, where is your independent church school? I don't want to hear about no charter school. Charter school is a public school. All that money you're getting, what you need public money for. You should have an independent school. So number one, where is the bank? Number two, where is the school? And number three, where is your hospital to protect and serve black life?
Mm.
Woo!
Oh, that's so true. That hits hard, you know.
It does.
And where is it?
Yeah.
Where is it? You know. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm like John the Baptist.
If the church is not a mega church, then the smaller churches need to come together so that they can actually invest together in the bank, invest together on the school,
that's
invest
cute.
Together in the hospital. Those are three critical institutions that we have to have. Here's my issue with the church, and it has nothing to do with the dogma. I don't have a problem with religion. I'm a descendant of African Methodist Episcopal Church ministers myself, so the religion is not my issue. It's the politics. How do you take so much money from these black folk and give them so little in return? How do you build such a gigantic prayer house with particular reference to the megachurches, with these $20 million loans and $40 million mortgages on these megachurches, but you don't hire a single black person? How is it that you're making all this money that you're giving to the white bank to pay your mortgage, but yet you don't give any of this money to black folk so they can pay their own mortgage? The problem with the church is that they are a bigger bloodsucker of the financial energy of the black community than any Chinese store, any Arab gas station, any Jewish bank. The church is the bloodsucker of the poor, not the white folk.
Congrats
on that one.
There's exceptions.
But we have to be honest about it. And we love our pastors. I got pastors who I love, but when I talk to the pastor, I say, listen, until you begin to contribute to the infrastructure creation of the black community, you are a part of the problem. Do not tell me that your job is getting ready, helping people get ready for heaven after they die, but you don't have a problem with them living in hell while they live.
Yeah, well, that's the problem I have with a lot of the churches, you know, being non-productive in the community.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you got very few that'll step
making
out.
Making you comfortable with oppression. The problem with church, from a psychological standpoint, it makes the victims comfortable with oppression. When you walk into church, you're angry, you want to get something done, another kid got shot, we ain't got no businesses, black kids selling dope because they can't find a job, and then the pastor will find some convenient verse out the Bible that make you think that God did all this and this is all God's will and that actually there's a blessing in being broke and poor. There's no blessing in being broke and poor. Having money, okay, loving money or needing money is not the root of all evil. Not having no money is the root of all evil. Broke-ass people are the root of all evil. So if you want to get rid of the devil, help black people find a job, and the devil will disappear.
And we do need more businesses like that. The problem with that is also is our youth especially, once they get in the system, in the justice system, and say they do have to serve a little time, then they have problems getting employed. They have problems because of the background check.
Even if they've never been arrested. Even if they've never been arrested. A black child has the most difficult time of finding employment in America. There's no other segment of the American population challenged finding employment than the black child. In fact, black teenager. In fact, the United States Department of Labor says that a business in America would hire an immigrant child who doesn't even speak English before they hire a black child who can.
No.
Man, that's that propaganda you talk about.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what it is.
Right there in the black community. Too.
Right there.
And we got a good example of that right there at McDonald's.
At McDonald's, you know, right at Pine and Peoria, right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
That's
and
right.
Dr. Umar, what's also, too, is on my mind about this, you know, we spoke of the propaganda campaign earlier. Do you think this is something that's going on that is for something that's to come? You know, because, you know, something has to be done first.
Without question. There's going to be a social catastrophe in America. I hope I don't live to see it, but I believe that I will, and I believe y'all will as well. All of these executive orders that President Obama has signed over the past 7.5 years, he didn't just sign them for the sake of signing them. Too many emergency management executive orders have been signed under President Obama. I believe that there's going to be a situation that's going to hit this country that's going to be far worse than 9-1-1, and it might almost resemble what has taken place in Afghanistan. It is coming, and it has to come, because under the New World Order, which is nothing other than a permanency of white supremacy, every country must be brought under the control of the international government and the international police. So that means independent countries like France, like England, like America, they have to be brought into social chaos so they can be brought into the international order.
Exactly.
That's right.
And
that's correct.
What amazes me, too, about this, and you're saying is, I'm so glad you put it that way, because Scripture speaks about this. It talks about this. And again, that's why I said this is, these are some of the things that upsets me with churches, because, you know, some of the stuff that I hear them talking about, man, again, like what you were saying before, you know, we're just supposed to sit back and just settle in this mess, and we're going to wait until we die, and then we're going to get all this glory and all this riches and everything else. And it's like, oh my God.
Well, I believe that you should try to pick a church that's involved in the community.
Yes.
That's out there, that's visible. You know, I deal with some guys here in Tulsa. They have a street ministry, and they're out on the streets every day, and they're talking to the homeless. They're talking to drug addicts. They're talking to single-parent mothers. They're giving out clothes and food and things of that nature. That's what they're doing. So I associate myself with those kind of people who are doing those kind of things. People can see them. You know, as people drive down the street, they just honk their horns. You know what I mean? So when you're with a ministry like that, a little small ministry, it's powerful. Mm-hmm. But they're doing things to help people in the community.
But we also got to recognize something else, too, family, and that is this. Black church or white church, Latino church or Italian church, churches have always been the handmaiden of oppression since the beginning of time. That's yes, right. It's true that most great revolutionaries came out of the church, but they broke away from it. Because church has always been, whenever a conqueror comes into a country, there's three institutions he must take over as soon as they study any great military general. I don't care if it's Napoleon. Right. I don't care who he is. The first thing you take over is the church. You have to take over the way people interpret their spiritual reality so it serves your function. And then you take over the school because you have to control the way the children are being made to think about you. And the third thing is the police force. Well, guess what? If you control the church and you control the school, you don't even need the police because the oppressed will kill each other.
All right. Exactly. Well, Dr. Umar, I'd like to just thank you, man, as we wind down right here on the Bobby Eaton Show. Man, it's been an enlightenment for all of us right here. And hopefully in the future, man, we can have you back on the broadcast to share some of that strong wisdom and knowledge that you've had right here today. And I'll see you when you come to Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know what I mean? And Sans Ray, where is he going to be again?
Where is he going to be? Well, of course, he's going to be at the Greenwood Cultural Center, and that is located at 322 North Greenwood Avenue. Don't miss out on this very profound speaker. It's Sunday, February 28th, from 5 to 8. Dr. Umar, for more information, drumarok@gmail.com. Once again, that's drumarok@gmail.com. Don't miss out, Tulsa.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson.
Thank you, family. Appreciate you. God bless you. We'll be right back.
Right now, save 50 to 70% off absolutely everything at Gap Factory. Even better, get 40% off clearance styles, plus t-shirts from $4.99 and shorts from $9.99. And just in time for summer, save 50 to 70% off the entire store at Banana Republic Factory. Plus, 50% off clearance and doorbuster dresses and polos starting at $19.99. Only at Banana Republic Factory stores. Search our store locator for your nearest Gap Factory and Banana Republic Factory store, or shop us online. Right now, save 50 to 70% off absolutely everything at Gap Factory. Even better, get 40% off clearance styles, plus t-shirts from $4.99 and shorts from $9.99. And just in time for summer, save 50 to 70% off the entire store at Banana Republic Factory. Plus, 50% off clearance and doorbuster dresses and polos starting at $19.99. Only at Banana Republic Factory stores. Search our store locator for your nearest Gap Factory and Banana Republic Factory store, or shop us online.